Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Disrespect spoke with John Clark of Ontario Coalition Against Poverty about last week's march on the Police Services Board to protest policing of minority communities and the encroachment of the police budget on funds for community development.
John, welcome again to Disrespect. You had a march last week on City Hall on police attitudes to disadvantaged people, particularly people of other races and people on low incomes.
Yes, we did. We went to City Hall here in Toronto to, in fact, a meeting of the Police Services Board.
How did the march go?
Well, the march drew from people in the Dunderson-Sherburn area where it started from, people that are low-income tenants, people that are homeless, and we brought people in from other parts of the city and from sympathetic organizations. I must say that we didn't get much of a turnout from the traditional activist community.
We got
a turnout from people directly affected by the issue. People came from that neighborhood. People came from down from the Somali community in North Etobicoke.
Right.
And we marched on City Hall. We had a crowd of just perhaps short of 100 people. Which, considering that we were talking about people affected coming out and actually challenging the chief of police and the police establishment itself, I think is quite incredible. People marched down to City Hall. We're fairly used to large size police mobilizations, but this one was beyond all bounds. They had mounted police ready. They had cops everywhere following us. They had cops stationed here and there. We understand from someone who was inside that they actually had police stationed throughout the building, including protecting councillors' offices.
Oh.
And when we got there, we were told that, as is standard at City Hall, that a demonstration can't bring its banners or placards in.
Right.
But then we were also told that no one could bring their individual bags in, and then for good measure we were told that there were only 25 seats left in the meeting,
Oh.
and that only 25 of our number would be allowed in.
I see.
So a number of people spoke in the square, and then a group of about 25 people went up there and confronted the Police Services Board, the number of the politicians, and the chief of police.
Yeah, what kind of response did you get?
Well, they predictably adjourned their meeting, and we'd rather expect that would happen. The meeting was adjourned, and then people that were affected actually spoke out directly. Including one woman from the Somali community who spoke about the abuse of young people taking place in her community, and she went right up to the chief of police and confronted him directly. After a relatively short period, there was an ultimatum, and people, as we more or less expected, withdrew, came out, and addressed everyone else that was out there on what had happened, and then we wrapped up the event. But it, in something like this, really is a question of the police force is growing. It's the damage it does and the injuries it causes and the misery it brings and the fear it brings to poor communities is increasing. But to the extent to which people organize and push back, it's a very good and a very healthy thing. And there's a voice being raised that's not the voice of some group of commentators from the sideline, but coming from the communities themselves, who are saying that we are sick of the resources we need being taken from us so that they can build new police stations and so that they can put more cops on the streets to harass our young people. And that's, I think, a very, very powerful thing when that starts to come.
Sure, when it's their money, yeah, I think it is a powerful thing. Are the councillors backing you up on this, or are they on the sidelines now?
No, I think we long ago recognised that in the present situation in Toronto that we don't have there's no voice that's going to emerge in the council that's going to be prepared to talk about what police do and to represent the thousands and thousands and thousands of people in poor communities who know very well what the police are about and who know that building up the size and power of the police force is not in any way helpful to their lives. You know, as one Somali woman put it in a recent confrontation with a group of cops in North Etobicoke who were harassing her children, when the cops said, "We're only here to make your community safe," she said, "Our community is completely safe until you show up."
You're listening to Disrespect on CFMU 93.3 with John Clark of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty.
It may sound as if I'm drifting off topic here, but I don't intend to, but there are questions that have to be asked. If the councillors aren't representing you, is the council a council not comprised of the minorities that make up the city?
I think true that it's the council. It's certainly true that the individual members of the council, or the body of the council, doesn't reflect the enormous diversity of people that live in the city, and that's true in terms of ethnicity and language. But it isn't just a question of what faces there are around the council table. It's really a question of politically what the council represents. And in the end, we're dealing with a council that is facilitating the agenda of upscale redevelopment and of the vested interests, and not a council that reflects the needs of the communities that make up the majority of the population of the city.
So these communities have yet to succeed in putting forward candidates, then it's probably fair to say, who truly represent their concerns on City Hall.
I think that's undeniably true. If that were not true, then we wouldn't be seeing social housing torn down while condominiums go up. We wouldn't be seeing people in a North End Etobicoke community like Mount Olive lack the resources for even a basketball court for their kids to play in, while a $17 million new police division is being built across the street so that they can be more effectively harassed and brutalized by the police force.
I'm really sticking my neck out here. Maybe Toronto has the community problem by the wrong handle. I don't want to urge anybody to conspire against the law, but personally, if I were being harassed by superior armed forces and didn't feel that I had a voice in my own community, it wouldn't be an unnatural impulse for me to decide to arm myself against the lack of protection, the lack of support, the discrimination that I face in my community as a member not deserving of police support. Is the gun problem really a police problem?
There are certainly issues in poor communities of people's anger and of people's desperation, and sometimes even of people engaging in activity that is harmful to themselves and harmful to other people. That's all true.
I think that
the conditions that exist and the lack of resources that exist are very much instrumental in that. But at the same time, I think it also has to be said that the notion that the answer to the problems that exist in poor communities is not to build up the capacity of the institution that most oppresses and most hurts those communities, the police force. The issue is to deal with those things through the provision of the resources that communities need. And at the moment, those resources are being taken away from people. And
so it's like a fixed pie, right? And what you see is just bigger slices going to enforcement and smaller slices going to community support.
Well, that's true. And of course, there's no question that in communities where you do have social problems coming to the fore, that creates divisions in communities. And sometimes even a section of an impoverished community will be, I think, duped into accepting the proposition that the answer is more police.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it never is. Whenever you have a process of criminalization going on, you don't solve the problems. That's the whole That's the whole point. I mean, you have in some parts of the world, perhaps the cities of the United States, you can see the end result of this process of treating poverty as if it were a war on crime or even a war on drugs, the more that you transfer resources from people's social needs to law and order crackdowns, the more precisely you compound the problems of communities. You don't solve them.
Yeah, and it's perceived by the people affected as a form of, forgive me for plugging the show's name, but disrespect, in the sense that the system condescends to these people, and the people then become further separated from the formal structure of their own community, and so the formal voice that they should have in their own community, and their voice expressing what these institutions like the police force should be doing in their community as opposed to what's really going on. It's a centrifugal phenomenon where the more force you apply, the harder it gets to control.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
You're listening to Disrespect, while we talk to John Clark of Ontario Coalition Against Poverty and take a short break from our interview.
Thank you.
Disrespect spoke with John Clark of Ontario Coalition Against Poverty about last week's march on the Police Services Board to protest policing of minority communities and the encroachment of the police budget on funds for community development.
When you look at the, we talk about the problems that exist, and we talk in terms of poverty and misery, but police are themselves a major part of the problem that confronts people in poor communities.
In what way? I mean, we've been discussing it, but I mean, yeah, give us an example.
Well, I mean, for example, that I talked about the lack of a basketball court in Mount Olive.
Right.
And you speak to families in that community, and they'll tell you that there may be other places where their children could go and play basketball, but they don't let them travel very far away. And the reason they want to keep such a close eye on their children is because they're worried about what the police are going to do.
Oh.
I mean, that's actually those who are not exposed to life in such a community might find it hard to believe. Those that are would well understand this, but actually feeling that their children are not safe out of doors because of the police is a major, major factor in the minds of many, many people.
Well, that's hard for someone from the middle class to imagine unless they've encountered it and spoken to the people affected.
That's probably true, but it is the reality. And of course, in a community like Toronto, where you have so many people who find themselves poor, who come from and are part of immigrant communities and communities of color, the thing has around it as well an obvious racial element that compounds the immediacy and the nastiness of the of that oppressive treatment.
I have to say that this is not a phenomenon confined to large cities. It just seems endemic to the granting of force to a small group of people. The most disturbing thing is there seems to be no countervailing force, no training, no awareness, and I'm sure they go through all kinds of formal awareness programs, but the ones who want to be aware are aware, and the ones who don't aren't.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but I think that in truth it isn't just a question, and certainly, you know, you can find in any, there's an interaction between the police force and communities, and
mm-hmm.
And that would involve all kinds of different situations, and you'd even find situations of police officers acting in ways that you might approve of, but that to me is not really the point. The point is that it isn't actually a question of, you know, the actions or the conduct of individuals. It's really that we live in a society that is based on the privileges and the position of a small class of people, and on the other hand is based on keeping most people out of that position of privilege, and in terms of how people are treated, the class they belong to, and racial issues as well,
mm-hmm.
are very much at the forefront. I mean, I talk of the Somali community. That's mm-hmm. a community that has over 90% of its members in Toronto living below the poverty line.
Yeah.
And so obviously the police force that such a society that creates such a situation is going to ensure that there is a police function that corresponds to its need to keep those people poor.
Yeah.
And it isn't just a question of whether this or that officer is personally a racist, or this or that officer is personally a decent person. It comes down to what's actually going on in society. The police, those carrying out the police function, are going to be as progressive or regressive, as repressive or as decent as the society that commissions them.
So, what we're trying to effect here then is a change in society.
Well, we certainly are, and it's the perspective of our organization that we want to contribute to the changing of this society.
Oh.
And we've been preparing this for some time, and it was based on our long-term realization that the police interact with poor communities, with homeless people, with immigrant people, with communities of color, not on the basis of being servers and protectors, but of being a force that is there to harass and to intimidate and to brutalize those communities.
I'm sure that individual members of the police would deny that they have any such intent, but I think our listeners are aware that the question is not one of intent, but of effect. How did you become aware of this effect?
Well, I think the realisation that the poor are targeted by the police and that the police force carries out an enforcement function that is inherently racist, I mean, that was around long before there was an OCAP.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been brought to our attention more and more based on the fact that the size of the police budget in Toronto is mushrooming out of control and has been for a number of years. And we're dealing with a situation where, regardless of the political regime in City Hall, whether it is triumphantly right-wing or supposedly progressive, all the regimes tend to rubber stamp this growth of the police. The present mayor, David Miller, who has an NDP card in his pocket and can certainly talk a good line when it comes to dealing with the issues of poor communities, goes on the television frequently to boast of the fact that there are more cops on the streets while he's mayor than at any other time in the history of the city.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we're not waiting around for the long-term solutions. We have to deal with the present reality.
Yeah.
And so, as much as possible, we work to with people in poor communities to mobilise, to challenge.
Right.
And the immediate question that we can take up, and unfortunately, we're not in a position to, disband the police force and establish some form of community alternative to them. We're in a position at the moment to challenge the growing police budget and demand resources for communities. So
in their place,
that's what we were on the streets doing.
You're listening to Disrespect with John Clark of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty.
I'm sure there is going to be further action in this regard. Do you have plans yet?
Yes, we have immediate plans, actually based in Etobicoke.
Mm-hmm.
On the 30th of the month, there's going to be a mobilization out of the Mount Olive community and with people who are allied coming from all over the city and beyond. And we're going to go to the site of the new 23 division that's being constructed.
Mm-hmm.
and condemn this, mobilize the community to condemn this incredible harmful waste of their resources in building this vile facility. And then we're going to go back into the community later in the day and work to put together a viable basketball court that the community can use.
So physically, you're going to try to establish a basketball court?
That's exactly what we're going to do, yes.
Okay. And what is the 30th? What day?
It's a weekday, I believe, a Thursday.
Yeah, okay. And people who want to know more about it?
Can give us a call here at the OCAP office at
416-925-6939. 925-6939. Yeah. Or they can go to your website, right?
They certainly can, yes. Just ocap.ca.
All right. John, again, I appreciate your time today. We'll be back to talk to you in the near future about this movement to abolish social housing in parts of Toronto and the harm that it does to the communities there. Again, my appreciation for your time to tell us about the effects of the march and the progress.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
At the middle of the show, you heard what some critics have called the first rock and roll song. Blind Blake and Charlie Spand and Hastings Street from the Encyclopedia of Boogie Woogie. Coming up, Pete Johnson, Holler Stomp from Hey, Piano Man. Thank you. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.